Now, the reading this morning is taken from Luke chapter 24, reading verses 13 through to 27. You'll find it on page 1061 in your church Bible under the heading On the Road to Emmaus. So that's Luke chapter 24, and we'll begin at verse 13. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem? And do you not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this has taken place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see him. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." This is the word of the Lord.
Sam.
Thank you, Peter. Okay, Sam's on her way, so we'll just make sure she can get in. Okay. So in the Sundays after Easter, we're going to spend our Bible reading and sermon time in the company of Luke. We're looking at Luke's last chapter in his Gospel, and then we're going to move into the first two chapters of Volume 2, the Book of Acts. And I hope that we can notice some of the distinctive things that Luke likes to concentrate on and get a flavour for the way that he tells the story. Luke was not a Jew, and so probably felt a bit of an outsider in the early church, which, of course, was nearly all Jewish. Morning, Sam. Sorry, no, I'm the one that needs to apologise. Great to see you. Luke was a doctor and a historian, and because he was an outsider, perhaps, he was particularly interested in some of the characters on the fringe of Jesus' story. He's got an eye for the outcast, and he's keen to show how quickly this new movement burst the bounds of Judaism and appealed to the wider non-Jewish world. So we're going to begin with a story that nobody else has told. And it's a lovely story. It's got one of those delicious things that we all enjoy reading when you, the reader, know what's going on, but the characters in the story don't. So these two disciples who are walking to Emmaus and who meet a stranger, they haven't got a clue who they're talking to, but we know. And it's a lovely feeling, isn't it, when you read a story and you actually know more than the characters who are actually there. It's called dramatic irony. It's a lovely technique. And in this beautifully written story, what we find is that while all the other gospel writers are focused on what was taking place in Jerusalem, Luke takes us out of the city in the company of two virtually unknown Jesus followers. One of them isn't even named. And the other, Cleopas, might possibly get a mention in John's Gospel, where we're told that Mary, the wife of Clopas, was at the cross during Jesus' crucifixion. Clopas, Cleopas, same person? Maybe. So it could be that this is a husband and wife who had come up to Jerusalem for the Passover, and now that it's over, they're going back home, back to Emmaus, where they lived. They were maybe hoping that Jesus was going to announce himself as the Messiah, begin the process of driving out the Romans and giving Israel back the kingdom. And instead of which, the Romans have killed him. So they might as well give up and go home. And on the way, they were having a heated discussion. Our translations kind of smooth it out and make it bland. It just says that they were talking and discussing together as they walked along. But the Greek word has got a lovely idiom to it. It talks about throwing words at each other. And, you know, husbands and wives do that from time to time, don't they? So they're having a bit of a row about what it all meant on their way. And this stranger would have come up and maybe heard their raised voices and said, "Oh, what are you talking about?" The thing is, he doesn't seem to know anything of this story. And they're amazed. And this is something that's gone absolutely viral. Everybody was talking about it. How do you not know? But this stranger continues to feign ignorance. And so he and we get to watch how these two describe Jesus to a man who apparently knows nothing of the story. So, take a look at what he says, verse 19. "What things are you talking about?" the stranger said. And they reply, "About Jesus of Nazareth." And why do they call him that? Well, that's because he was Jesus of Nazareth, not Jesus of Bethany or Jesus of Caesarea. So that was partly just to help identify, get the right Jesus, first of all. But then Jesus of Nazareth? And everybody knew Nazareth was a dump. Nobody important ever came from there. Every town or city has its bad quarter, doesn't it? The place that you really don't want to come from. Well, Nazareth was the one in Israel, I'm afraid, that nobody wanted to come from. So Jesus of Nazareth, that was not a good recommendation. But apparently he was a prophet. How do we know he was a prophet? Because he was powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. Everybody saw what he did and heard what he said. And it was enough to conclude that he was a prophet. He's been killed. But we had hoped that he would be the one to redeem Israel. We had hoped, but not anymore. There is just this one thing, though. His body is missing. The women went there first thing in the morning. They claimed to have seen angels, seeing that he's alive. So the men went to check it out and find this ridiculous story was true. You can't believe what women say after all, can you? And they saw the grave, but they didn't see him. Naturally, in Greek, the words are put in a different order, which for once, our English translations copy. Him they did not see. And that's a thing that Greek does to emphasize something. They didn't see him. Him they did not see. So here are these two, interrupted in the middle of their argument, not knowing what to believe. And what does the stranger do? He insults them. "You fools, slow of heart to believe." Often Jesus would say to his disciples, "Where is your faith?" But here, instead of referring them to the things that Jesus was actually doing, because he's still pretending that he isn't Jesus, he refers them to the Bible. He says, it's all there. Why haven't you worked it out already? What is the stranger saying to them? You should have known? Not quite. He's getting at the fact that they seem to have given up hope that Jesus of Nazareth was the Messiah. We had hoped that he would be the one to redeem Israel. We had hoped, but not anymore. And the stranger's answer is to say that the scriptures say that the Messiah had to suffer and then enter glory. So we're over the page now. And if you look at what he says in verse 26, did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets. And that phrase implies the whole of the Jewish Bible. From the beginning, the Torah, the books of Moses, all the way through the rest, which was called the prophets, all the way through, he's saying that there is a message there, that this is exactly what was going to happen. Read it right, and the whole of our scriptures are telling you that the Messiah must suffer and then enter glory. Trouble is, Jewish people had always read it differently. We're suffering, and we want the glorious Messiah to come and save us. Now, maybe it sounds a bit presumptuous for a Gentile, Luke, to be telling Jews that they've got their Bible upside down all along. But actually, this is what Luke is trying to do all the way through his gospel. Elsewhere, for instance, he records Jesus savagely criticizing the Pharisees because they got obsessed with the little details of keeping the law but overlooked its broad sweep and the main message it was trying to put across. And he criticized the Torah experts too, saying, you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry. You won't even lift a finger to help. You've taken away the key of knowledge. You yourselves have not entered, and you're stopping everybody else from going in. You lot, you call yourself Bible experts, but you've missed the whole point of what the Bible is about. You've made it about rules and prohibitions, about holiness and righteousness and exclusive morality. But really, it's about hope and rescue. It's about repair and redemption. You think God is cross with us because we broke his laws, so we must try really, really hard to be good from now on. But actually, it's telling you that God knows that his world is broken. But don't worry, he's coming to fix it. If we read the story like this, it's got something very important to say to us. This story shows us, doesn't it, that we can encounter Christ in many different ways and often unexpected ways. And the tragedy is that when God's Messiah is standing right in front of us, we don't recognize him. Him they did not see. That's the bad news. But the good news, the hope, is that he comes to us when we least expect him and when we most need him. Just as these two disciples, whoever they were, did. They had given up on Jesus. Him they did not see. But Jesus hadn't given up on them. He followed them. He caught them up. He spoke to them. He chided them for their lack of faith. So may he do the same for us when our faith is weak. When we fail to see him, may he come after us. May he follow us, chase us down, rebuke us for our lack of faith, and speak to us the truth of who he really is. Amen.